Yeah. I am a compulsive eater and your leader for this meeting.
Hi.
This is a meeting conceived to bring an added dimension of realism to our remote OA community. We want to again emphasize to everyone that the link, login, and instructions that you receive to participate on this meeting are not to be published anywhere, but only to be shared with those directly interested. Our goal is to share the power of recovery via a meeting that is safe and by its nature very visual. We want to welcome all those here and virtually. You may reference our webcast guide for detailed instructions and information. If you would like to participate in the meeting either by video or by phone, before the meeting begins, please use the Sign Up Genius link called Volunteer to Participate Virtually on our website, mnhowlive.org. On the same webpage, you will find a link to our meeting, readings, and tools. If you have not signed up, you may volunteer to take a reading or a tool or participate in any way in the meeting's live chat. We do this in advance so that we can keep the meeting flowing smoothly. If you need technical help, there will be multiple coaching sessions Thursday evenings from 5:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time on this same meeting. If you're unable to make this time, please send a note to mnhowlive@gmail.com. The audio portion of this meeting is being recorded. Please visit our website at mnhowlive.org to download the recordings in MP3 format. We ask that if you do need to eat during the meeting, please eat quietly in the back of the room. Please take a moment to silence or turn off your cell phones. To open the meeting, let us have a moment of quiet meditation, and for those who wish to join us in saying the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. I assume that I'm not alone this evening, but for the record, are there any other compulsive eaters at this meeting other than myself? The We Care folder will be circulating in the room for the duration of the meeting. The first time for you to list your name, telephone number, and email, and the rest for you to take names and phone numbers to call during the week. If you are joining us remotely, please use your meeting's chat function as a virtual We Care book and enter your first name, phone number, times available for phone calls, and whether or not you're currently a sponsor in the HOW format. We will then add you to the We Care book that's being circulated in the room. A copy of this list can be sent to you after the meeting via text or email. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and mutual support, are recovering from compulsive eating. We welcome anyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and carry this message of recovery to those who still suffer. Would someone please read, what is HOW?
Hello, my name is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
HOW is a movement within Overeaters Anonymous whose basic principle is that abstinence is the only means to freedom from compulsive eating and the beginning of a spiritual life. Where and why did HAL begin? HAL began in Phoenix in 1981 as a means of reviving a group called OA Victorious. Its meeting format is taken from Roseanne's book, I Put My Hand in Yours, and centers around the concept of service. Many of the questions used in HAL sponsoring stem from the OA Plus and Westminster groups. The outline of service came from the OA Suffolk County, New York Sponsors Guide. Pass.
Thanks, Mary. Would someone please read the only requirement? We can't hear you.
Hear me now? Yes. Now? Okay.
Yes.
Yay. I am, Jane, compulsive overeater, still pretty new, day 47. The only requirement, Overeaters Anonymous, hi, respects the anonymity of each OA group. We do suggest, however, that any group that has requirements in addition to the suggested 12 steps and 12 traditions inform its members that these requirements are what that particular group has found effective in working the program and do not represent OA as a whole. The members of this group have found the HAL concept to be effective in working the OA program. The opinions expressed here this afternoon by those who share are their own and are not necessarily those of OA. The Board of Trustees states, we understand the third tradition to mean, we understand the third tradition to mean that individual ways of working one's program should not exclude any compulsive overeater from attendance and participation at OA meetings anywhere, anytime. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Anyone who says he or she is a member is a member. We of Overeaters Anonymous welcome all members with open arms. Thank you.
Thanks, Jane.
Kate, sorry. Would someone please read the HAL concept?
Hi, my name's Heidi. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Heidi.
Thank you. The Overeaters Anonymous HAL meetings have been formed to offer the compulsive overeater who accepts the 12 steps and the 12 traditions as a program of recovery, a disciplined and structured approach. HAL groups are formed in the belief that our disease is absolute and that only absolute acceptance of the OA program will offer any sustained abstinence to those of us whose compulsion has reached a critical level. Therefore, we accept the tools of the program and the 12 steps and 12 traditions as necessary for our recovery. Our meetings are dedicated to the concept of remaining honest, open-minded, and willing to listen. This is the how of the program. We pray that the collective group conscious and love that these ideals offer us will promote a strong sense of security that will enable us to experience a new unity and wholeness with all those around us, and that the how ideals will help us to progress in our program of recovery on a daily basis. To be certain, much of our strength is found in the structure of meetings and in the daily adherence to the program as it is written in our literature. The evening meeting also firmly understands that after our recovery has begun through abstinence and the taking of the first three steps, our further surrender to the additional steps of recovery offers us a promise of happiness, contentment, and achievement in all areas of our lives. We ensure our continued and sustained abstinence from compulsive eating to be forever aware that God is doing for us what we have never been able to do for ourselves. May God, as each of us understands him, open our minds and our hearts to the love which is manifested in this room. Amen.
Thanks, Heidi. Would someone please read Reflections for the Newcomer?
Hello, my name is Tamara. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Tamara.
Hello, everyone. Reflections for the Newcomer. I hope you can hear me okay. I'm trying a different mic here. Welcome to OA HAL. We are all so glad that you've decided to become a part of our fellowship. You know that the HAL concept is a discipline program. We believe that the discipline of weighing and measuring, of telephoning your sponsor at a particular time, of attending meetings and making phone calls, all lead to a life based on the universal discipline, which is accord rather than discord, even with many things going on around us. Therefore, if there's a breakdown in any of these areas, the concept is threatened, as is individual's abstinence. We found that the discipline must remain as constant for the beginner as for the sponsor. If the newcomer shies away from this life's responsibility, the sponsor may give the newcomer's time slot to someone more committed to recovery. This is not a personal affront, but a matter of necessity. So many who think they should recover, in fact, are not ready. If the newcomer should show lack of commitment, the sponsor may then offer the newcomer assistance in finding a new sponsor. The rationale here is if the newcomer insists on picking up the food before the phone, then there is a breakdown in the level of communication between the sponsor and the newcomer. Frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. From the Doctor's Opinion, Big Book, page 26, paragraph 2. If a sponsor slips, get a new one. The pitfalls of self-deception cannot be overstressed if you are to recover. Therefore, a sponsor in all self-honesty must release all sponsees to continue his or her own recovery. A sponsor cannot give what he or she does not experience. Finally, you must believe that we need each other. All problems that arise can be worked on via the phone or person-to-person contact. Only positive, upbeat recovery belongs at our meetings. A body badly burned by alcohol does not often recover overnight, nor do twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. We are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is a most powerful restorative. From the family afterwards in the Big Book, page 133, paragraph 2. Good luck. Everyone in the fellowship is praying that you find the release from the obsession so many of us have. God bless, and no matter what, keep coming back. We'll always be here for you. Pass.
Thanks, Emma. Would someone please read an excerpt from Step 2 of the OA 12 and 12? We can't hear you.
Oh, now you can hear me, yeah? Hi, this is Lisa
J.,
a grateful recovering compulsive overeater in Portland, Oregon. Excerpt from Step 2 of the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions of Overeaters Anonymous, pages 9 to 11. When we look with complete honesty at our lives, we see that where eating is concerned, we have acted in an extremely irrational and self-destructive manner. Under the compulsion to overeat, many of us have done things no sane person would think of doing. We have driven miles in the dead of night to satisfy a craving for food. We have eaten food that was frozen, burnt, stale, or even dangerously spoiled. We have eaten food off of other people's plates, off the floor, off the ground. We have dug food out of the garbage and eaten it. We have frequently lied about what we have eaten, lied to others because we didn't want to face the truth ourselves. We have stolen food from our friends, family, and employers, as well as from the grocery store. We have also stolen money to buy food. We have eaten beyond the point of being full, beyond the point of being sick of eating. We have continued to overeat, knowing all the while we were disfiguring and maiming our bodies. We have isolated ourselves to eat, damaging our relationships and denying ourselves a full social life. For the sake of our compulsive eating, we have turned ourselves into objects of ridicule and we have destroyed our health. Then, horrified by what we were doing to ourselves with food, we became obsessed with diets. We spent hundreds of dollars on weight loss schemes. We bought all sorts of appetite control drugs. We joined diet clubs and spas. We had ourselves, hypnotized and analyzed. We had major surgery on our digestive systems. We had our ears stapled or our jaws wired shut. All of this we did willingly, hoping we could someday have our cake and eat it too. Some of us went from doctor to doctor looking for a cure. The doctors gave us diets, but we had no better success with those than with the other diets we'd been on. The doctors gave us shots and pills. Those worked for a while, but we inevitably lost control and overate again, putting back on the weight we had worked so hard to lose. Many of us tried fasting with and without a doctor's supervision. Usually we lost weight, but as soon as we started eating again, the compulsive eating behavior returned along with the weight. Some of us learned to purge ourselves with vomiting, laxatives, or excessive exercise. We'd stuff food in our mouths until we were in physical pain, and then we'd get rid of it. We damaged our digestive systems and our teeth while we starved our bodies of nutrients needed to live. Those of us who were overweight got plenty of advice from others about how to get to our ideal size, but nothing permanently solved our problem. We found that no matter what we did to ease our turmoil, our compulsive eating eventually returned. Over the long haul, our weight went up and our self-esteem went down. After a while, we became battle-weary and discouraged. Still, we could never accept our powerlessness. The prospect of being obese, sick, and out of control for the rest of our lives led some of us to conclude that life was simply not worth living. Many of us thought about suicide. Some of us tried it. Most of us, however, never reached suicidal desperation. Instead, we took comfort in a feeling that everything was all right as long as we got enough to eat. The only trouble was that as our compulsive eating progressed, it became harder for us to get enough. Instead of bringing comfort, the overeating backfired. The more we ate, the more we suffered, yet we continued to overeat. Our true insanity could be seen in the fact that we kept right on trying to find comfort in excess food long after it began to cause us misery. I'm Lisa J., a compulsive overeater in Portland, and I will pass.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, Lisa. Would someone please read from chapter 5 of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, How It Works?
Hi, I'm Lee. I hope you can hear me. It's good to be back. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Thank you. Hi, Lee.
Hi. Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier way, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Pass.
Thank you, Lee.
Thanks, Lee.
Would someone please read the 12 steps of recovery?
Hi, can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Bridget. I'm a compulsive overeater.
And, hey, Bridget.
Hi. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood God. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood God, praying only for God's knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Big Book, Chapter 5, page 60.
Would someone please read the 12 traditions of the program?
I volunteered. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, no.
Oh, good, okay.
We cannot see you, but we can hear you.
It says I can't, oh wait, I can't start the video because the host stopped it. Oh, well. Oh, there I am.
There you are.
There I am. Hi, I'm Georgia, compulsive overeater. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, our group should be each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass. Thank you.
minutes for each tool. Would someone be willing to be our timekeeper? Thanks, Sheila. Thank you. Good. All right, so abstinence plan of eating.
Hello, my name is Tamara. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hey, Tamara.
Hello, hello. Plan of eating. A food plan is a commitment to recovery. The HOW disciplines were designed for food-addicted people. We believe in a disciplined and structured approach. HOW abstainers do not modify their food plan to suit themselves and commit themselves to black and white abstinence. Deviations invite the return of many other problems. A food plan is not a personal thing in HOW. This means that we depend upon each other for the strength and growth that we need to remain abstinent. We join together in an effort to free compulsive overeater from the knowledge of food, the food plan, positive thinking, and the 12 and 12 traditions of alcoholics. We weight and measure meals with nothing in between except sugary beverages and sugar. Food is written down, called in to a sponsor, and committed.
Tamara, you're
so
waking
that we
up.
Can get out with our recovery and out of the food. We also believe that negative thinking is a large part of our disease. We abstain from negative thinking. Those of us who work the HOW program concept use the following guidelines for food plans. One, we do not write our own food plan. We use a food plan given to us by a doctor, nutritionist, or dietitian. We discuss it with our sponsor. We do not pick one that allows any of our binge foods. If some food on our plan becomes a problem, we avoid it. Two, we do not skip meals, switch meals, or combine meals. We do not deviate or manipulate our food plan in any way. If we need to change our committed food during the day, we call a sponsor. Three, we weigh and measure all of our portions so that there is no guesswork. We do not measure by eye. We use a measuring cup, spoon, and a scale. And now I will describe the tools that we use for our weighing and measuring. Some tools, of course, measuring cups. You can put your food into this and be sure and be consistent. If you decide that you're going to be a sufferer, you'll put in your rice. You'd actually and either add it in a little bit so it's in there, and then take a straight edge, which is the side here, and go across. So you're getting just what's in the cup. Anything that's along the edge is not yours. Anything on the knife is not yours. Anything that falls on the countertop is not yours. You can also do the same measurement, but you can be, what they call it, if you want to just set the food in there, do the same amount of leveling off. We always do that, and then eat what's in the cup. But do be consistent with how you do it. I didn't bring a liquid measuring cup here with me to the phone, but you can see obviously the other sizes of measuring devices there. And your food plan would have quantities of volume instead of the weight. You could use this. This is actually kind of not a true one that you would use for food because it only goes up to 1 pound. But I wanted to show you, this is the manual one, the spring-loaded one, that you can put a cup on and inside on a flat surface, and you make an adjustment here with this little dial in the back so that it starts at zero, so that you have an accurate reading. This can be used just about anywhere. It works great if it's freezing in Minnesota in the winter and you leave this out in the car, it won't matter. You can use it fine, whereas batteries in a digital scale will freeze and you'll have a little bit of trouble, you know, using it later when it's when you try to come to use it. So this is a digital scale. It actually has a on-off switch. It is battery operated, so you always need to remember that you need extra batteries in your abstinence kit as well, because it'll probably go out about the last time you think it will. And sometimes it seems to go a lot faster than others, you know, between battery changes. But anyways, you put your yourself by zeroing out the scale, you put your plate on here, and then start putting your food on top. So you would measure out your 3 ounces of protein, and then you would go exactly to 3 ounces, not 3.1 or 2.9. You're getting exactly on. It also has adjustments here, ounces, kilograms, and grams. So depending on what units you're using for certain foods, you'll change that. And the important thing is in between each ingredient, you can zero it out, tear it out. And it's even safer to actually measure the food here and then come over and put it into your bowl, you know, on the counter and stuff too, so that you get exactly what you need and you don't have any extra. Also in the abstinence kit, we have our phone, because it's very important that we have contact to people if we have questions. If something falls on the floor or the dog eats it or something and you need to make a substitution, you call your sponsor, and if unavailable, then you call two or three other sponsors until you can reach someone. You have phone numbers obviously saved in your phone. I would caution to also have written down the old-fashioned way on paper and pen, and with paper and pen to have it in your bag, in your abstinence by your scale, so that if something happens to your phone, you will be able to call someone. You'll have the numbers there and they will be available for that. I think that's probably it. Maybe I forgot something, but I'll continue. We wear once a month until we reach goal weight, and once a week on maintenance. 5, unless advised otherwise by our doctor, we take a multivitamin and drink 64 ounces of water a day. 6, we do not drink alcohol. 7, we do not use foods containing sugar, except if sugar is listed 5th or beyond on the ingredients label. Above all, we do not vacillate or water down the disciplined nature of the HAL program. It's not the extra string bean that counts, it's the decision to take it. I found about a week ago, I was getting quite kind of bored with my food. And I, of course, was wondering what was up with that. And about the time I started to think, gee, is this program really worth it? Gee, do I really need to go through all this stuff? I mean, it's been 2.5 years, you know, I was just feeling really lazy. And I should have known that was probably, my ego was getting a little big and my self-confidence was kind of vulnerable. And I had something happen to me on Saturday with my food that just really scared me. I was very frightened with it. I happened to have some tea, hot tea with an ingredient in it that is not my food plan. It was unintentional on my part. I didn't know it was in the tea. And I took one sip, and no lie, I had an immediate jolt, just like being electrified. That component went on the candle, and I was immediately back to the first day I started. My mind absolutely psycho. I was just ready to get up and leave the workshop, go find my binge foods, you know, buffet, everything, man. I had it planned within 30 seconds of having I had supportive people around me. I was in the perfect spot at the perfect time. OA fellows around me, and I was able to talk about it and kind of talk through it and try to breathe deep. And eventually it subsided. It was about 8 minutes, I think. And by 10 minutes, my breath was back to normal, and I my heart and whatnot. But it was honestly like I'm a, you know, shot of heroin. I've never done heroin. But anyways, I just wanted to share that because I think it's important that we realize that we have to be on our guard. You know, I mean, not paranoid, but just be ready because this disease is, you know, cunning and baffling, and it really is hard to, you just have to be diligent. You just really have to be diligent and know that it's worth it because that little bit, that 8 minutes I spent in my old brain was definitely a great reminder of what it used to be like for a program. So with that, thank you. I pass. Thank you.
Tamara. Sponsorship.
Hey, all. It's Megan in Virginia.
Hey,
let
Megan.
Me collapse down here. Okay. Let me know if I start to break up or anything.
What?
Can I be heard?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we can hear you.
All right. Just wanted to make sure. Thank you. Okay. Sponsorship. My name's Megan. I'm an OA House sponsor. Sponsors are OA members who are committed to abstinence and to living the 12 steps and 12 traditions to the best of their ability. We ask a sponsor to guide us through our program of recovery on all three levels: physical, emotional, and spiritual, and working with other members of OA and sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Sponsors continually renew and reaffirm their own sobriety. Sponsors share their program up to the level of their own experience. Ours is a program of attraction. Find a sponsor who has what you want and ask how it was achieved. A member may work with more than one sponsor and may change sponsors at will. A house sponsor is a compulsive eater who has completed at least 70 days of back-to-back abstinence and who has taken the first three steps of the program. Sponsors have also completed at least 70 days of assignments. Reflections to the sponsor, suggestions for discussion. No list of reflections and meditations are end-alls and be-alls for the newcomer. A sponsor must be attentive not only to what the new person is saying, but also to what the newcomer is not saying. There are many newcomers who are reticent to purchase books and who are hesitant to throw themselves headlong into the program. Therefore, we have a list of pre-commitment assignments. Above all, do not vacillate or water down the disciplined nature of the HOW program. It is not the extra string bean that is the problem. It is the decision to have it that results in some trouble. The HOW concept is an alternative for people who have tried everything else. Therefore, the program is an immutable triumvirate of tools, steps, and traditions. Using the tools of weighing and measuring our food, sponsors, meetings, phone calls, reading and writing, service and anonymity, we follow the 12 steps and the 12 traditions of OA in order to free ourselves from the bondage of food addiction. Sponsors do not have the right to play God. We help each other. So, I am really grateful to have a sponsor who is willing to take my call every morning, very early in the morning, and listen to my food, listens attentively to my inventory that I give to her every day. And she provides, and my reading and writing, and she provides feedback and support. And she listens for what I call the voice of the disease. So I really believe that one of the reasons the HOW program works so well is that sponsorship and the phone calls are required. because we talk to people, and as we talk to them and as we let these people into our lives and into what's going on in our head, they can hear the voice of the disease when it's getting going. Just like our last person who pitched had people around her when the voice of the disease was screaming so loudly in her mind. When I'm, you know, struggling with a relationship or struggling with a situation and the disease is telling me, you know what, I know what's going to fix it, right? Because the disease always has an answer, and the disease is always answer. Its answer is always the food is going to fix my problem. And my fellows and my sponsor, because she hears that inventory every day, can hear the voice of the disease when I can't. I can't hear it in my own head. I can hear it when it comes out of somebody else's mouth. When it comes out of my sponsee's mouth, I can recognize it. But I can't hear it when it's coming out of my mouth. So that's, I think, what we do for each other. Also, I think that having the strong fellowship, I've heard it spoken of as maybe a web of sponsorship, that we, none of us is doing it alone, right? We sponsor each other. And when I don't know, I have an entire vast array of other sponsors who've been working this this program a long time, and who have a lot of collective wisdom and strength. And when I don't know or I don't have that experience, I can reach out to them and I can tell my sponsees to do the same thing. And I just know for me that without sponsorship, without any of the tools, but specifically without sponsorship, I would not stay abstinent for long. The accountability and the gift of another person listening is essential for me to stay abstinent today. So thank you for letting me share, and I pass.
Megan. Thanks, Megan. Will all sponsors, Howe and OA, please join me in sharing the following. One, how long in OA and Howe? Two, how long abstinent in OA or Howe? Three, how much weight lost or gained? This is not a time for sharing. For sponsors, please keep it brief and no applauding between sponsors. If they wish to, sponsors can announce that they have an opening for a sponsee and provide their phone numbers. You may line up starting at the microphone and continuing around the room to the right. Remote sponsors are invited to share following our line by clicking the raise hand button and turning on your video camera, or just turning on your video. When it is your turn to share, you will hear your name and see a quote, "you are unmuted by host," unquote, screen prompt. Following your share, please turn off your video as the meeting moderator remutes your line. Sponsors joining us on the phone, please wait for a pause in the line and press star and six on your telephone keypad.
Hi there, it's Howard. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm a sponsor on the Late Ship. I've been abstaining a little over 33 years. I have 18 years and 4 months of abstinence in OA. How I've gained 10 pounds and a little bit of sanity.
Hi, I'm Virginia, compulsive eater, bulimic. I started the program in December 2007. My current back-to-back abstinence is June 19th, 2011. I'm down 40 and up 30 from a doctor-prescribed goal weight, so I'm off a 70-pound swing I was on most of my adult life.
Hi, I'm Sheila, a compulsive overeater. I came directly to Howe in May of 2015. My abstinence dates May 19th of 2015, and I have given away over 90 pounds.
Good evening, I'm Mary, compulsive overeater.
Woo!
I came into OA in Western Massachusetts in the spring of 2004. We moved here to St. Paul, Minnesota in October 2012, came to my first meeting on Halloween, and I became absent the next day, and I've lost and maintained 75 pounds.
Hi, I'm Heidi, a compulsive overeater. I came directly into Howe in 2007. I lost 150 pounds and kept it off for almost 7 years, and then chose to leave the program and I quickly gained 110 pounds back in a couple, 2-3 years. I am back in the program and my recommitted date is July 29th of this year. Oh, down 68 pounds.
Hi, I'm Becky P., compulsive overeater, and I started OA How August 1st of 2003, and am down 60 pounds from my top weight. I've had a couple abstinent pregnancies in the program over the last, now I have a 13 and 9-year-old non-abstinent children, and dealing with that, and then I came in with type 2 diabetes, and I haven't had to worry about that in the last years. So I, date of how abstinence, July of 2017.
Georgia.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, my name is Georgia. I started OA How in 2005 and had 8 years back-to-back and then relapsed. My current back-to-back abstinence date is July 18th of 2018, and I'm down approximately 73 pounds. Georgia, in Madison, Wisconsin. Pass.
Lee.
Hi, I'm Lee in Texas, a compulsive overeater, sugar addict, and a How 2-hour format sponsor. I came to OA How in November of 2017, and my latest back-to-back abstinence date is November 13, 2018. I am 45 pounds below my highest weight, and I'm at my maintenance weight. Thanks.
Megan.
Hey all, this is Megan in Virginia. I am an OA How sponsor. I'm a compulsive overeater. I found OA in the summer of 2006. I came into How in February of 2009. Had a pretty major relapse, gained north of 90 pounds in 14 months, and came back into program in November of 2013. Have been working at back-to-back since then, but have had a couple slips. So my back-to-back abstinence date is June 8th of 2015, giving away that same 90 pounds a second time, and grateful to be here with you again today.
Melanie.
Hi, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater and a 2-hour house sponsor. I was introduced to Overeaters Anonymous in the fall of 1989, and 17 years later in the rooms I found How. I have an absence date of November 5th, 2005. Somebody told me today it was my How anniversary, and that was surprised me. I have an absence date of November 5th, 2005. I'm maintaining over 165-pound weight loss for 13 of those 14 years. And this is Melanie from Oregon. Thanks.
Chris.
Hi, I'm Chris J. from Sterling Heights, Michigan. I entered OA How in January of 2005. I got serious in April that same year. Since then, I had one food slip and a program slip, so my renewed abstinence date is July 26, 2007, and I have gratefully maintained a 123-pound weight loss. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Kelly.
Hi, my name is Kelly from Southern California, and I am the How 2-Hour Format sponsor. I came into OA in 2013, How in October of 2018. My abstinent date is February 27, 2019. I'm maintaining a 70-pound weight loss only by How and the grace of my higher power. Kelly, Southern California. I don't have any sponsee openings. Thank you. Pass. Okay, Maddie.
The other Kelly.
Hey, this is, I don't know how to do this thing. Well, this is Kelly F. I'm recovered. Just as you asked you to start your video. Well, I'm challenged. I'm on my phone at work. So anyway, this is Kelly F. Recovered compulsive eater and bulimic in Oklahoma, sponsoring the 2-hour how format. My abstinent date is March 14th of 2015. Maintaining 125 pound weight loss in OA and the last 90, hey, there I am in how, and I pass.
That's it.
Is there anyone else before we go on?
Hi, my name is Tamara. I'm a compulsive overeater. I came into traditional OA on January 2nd of 2016. Heard about the HOW program and became abstinent on April 3rd of 2017. The grace of God and the miracles of this program, I've been relieved of 97 pounds from my top weight with over 75 pounds lost in the HOW program. And I pass. Thank you.
Anyone else?
Nancy.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Nancy, the compulsive overeater. I came into the rooms of HOW in June of 2017. I have been relieved of 82 pounds from my known top weight, and I'm sorry, what else am I supposed to say?
You're good.
I think that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Anyone else? Should I go on? Clayfeet.
Hang on just a second. Mike?
Oh, we have Mike? Someone else coming on?
Maybe not.
No. Well, then we're going to go on. Clayfeet. We should remember that all OAs have clayfeet. We should not set any member upon a pedestal and mark her or him out as a perfect OA. It's not fair to the person to be singled out in this fashion, and if the person is wise, she or he will not wish it. If the person we single out as an ideal OA has a fall, we are in danger of falling too. Without exception, we are all only one bite away from a binge. No matter how long we have been in OA or how, nobody is entirely safe. OA itself should be our ideal, not any particular member of it. Anonymity.
Hi, I'm Chris Jay from Sterling Heights, Michigan. Anonymity. Good to be here. Anonymity is a tool as well as a tradition because it guarantees that we will place principles before personalities. It offers each of us freedom of expression and protection against gossip. Anonymity assures us that only we as individual OA members have the right to make our membership known within our community. Anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television means that we never allow our last names or faces to be used once we identify ourselves as OA members. Within the fellowship, Anonymity means that whatever we share with another OA member will be held in respect and confidence. What we hear at meetings should remain there. It should be understood, however, that anonymity must not be used to limit our effectiveness within the fellowship. It is not a break of anonymity to give our names and addresses to the secretary of our group or to other service offices of OA for the purpose of conducting OA business, which is primarily 12-step work. It is likewise not a break of anonymity to enlist 12-step help for group members in trouble, provided we are careful to omit specific personal information. If this, their disease has reactivated and we persist in protecting their anonymity, we may, in effect, help kill them and their anonymity. Anonymity is the part of the program that allows each of us to stand in front of our fellows and share for the first time honestly who we are, where we have been, and where we hope to go, without fear that our story will be told outside these rooms. For many of us, the OA rooms are the first place where we have no fear of being judged or criticized. We are accepted as we are at the moment. This is the first time for most of us that we experience sharing where we are not told what we did wrong. We come into OA at rock bottom, mangled emotionally, physically, and spiritually. We are supported back to health with honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. We are encouraged to speak of our pain, and we are lovingly told, your secrets are safe. Come share our recovery. Recovery on a threefold level, physical, emotional, and spiritual. Lastly, a word to newcomers, please join us. However, if you decide that our program is not for you, please remember that our anonymity allows us to grow and recover from a very serious disease. Whom you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here.
Here, here. Here, here.
And I love this tool of anonymity. I remember early on in program, I was called out because I had broken anonymity in some form or fashion that was picked up by another member in my meeting. And they took me aside and just very tactfully told me that was just not done in no way how. And I thankfully had enough humility to accept that and to change how I express things by protecting other people's anonymity. So, and sometimes we may do something human and really not mean to break anonymity, but it's good to be put right. I also remember being able to first share what was going on with me. I used to be a guy that used to think that you could ride your horse alone like John Wayne and just keep everything bottled up inside. You know, that just didn't work in no way how. And so I started sharing what was eating me so I didn't have to eat over it. And it was very, very freeing for me to be able to do that and not worry about whatever I was sharing would be shared outside the rooms. Also, I have to say that at one point, a fellow sufferer was going through a very difficult time and had expressed some suicidal thoughts to me. So I fanned out to my network of fellow OA HOW members, and without a lot of information, I said, this guy's in trouble. Please give him a call. And thank God that he checked himself into a hospital that night after receiving several phone calls I later found out. But this paragraph about protecting someone's anonymity when they're in trouble, this is very serious. It can be very serious. And with that, I'll pass. And I'm very grateful to be on this meeting. Thank you.
Thanks, Christopher.
Thanks.
Telephone calls.
Hi, I'm Sheila, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Sheila.
Telephone.
Compulsive eating is a disease of isolation. The telephone is a means of communicating with another compulsive overeater between meetings. It provides an immediate outlet for those hard-to-handle highs and lows we all experience. The telephone is also a daily link to our sponsors, and as part of the surrender process is a tool by which we learn to ask for help, reach out, and extend that same help to others. In OA How, we are asked to make at least 4 telephone calls a day, 1 to our sponsor and 3 more to other OA members. These calls give us an opportunity to talk program on a daily basis. The telephone is our lifeline. When I came into program, this was one of the tools that I wasn't completely sure I was going to like, because I really didn't like talking on the phone. However, what I have learned, as it says here, the telephone is our lifeline. I have learned and experienced that the telephone is indeed my lifeline. And it is probably one of my favorite tools now, because I love talking to all of you on the phone. But, you know, recently I've had, I think it was probably over the weekend, I was home one evening by myself. And in the past, those evenings home by myself would have been my binge time, especially on a weekend. And, you know, I kind of had some of that loneliness going in. I think it was like it was either Friday or Saturday night. I'm home by myself. And, you know, there's that little thing that says, this is the time when you're supposed to pick up the telephone and call someone. And I did. I called another fellow. I had a wonderful conversation. The loneliness kind of escaped me, and it was good. I've also been going through some difficult times with a child of mine, and just to be able to call people and share that and talk about that and just have people listen and provide suggestions, or to even some just hear people say, you know, I've kind of been in the same boat, or I can relate. It's just so comforting. And, you know, in the past, like, none of this I would have shared with anybody. And I kept it all inside, and then I ate over it all. And so today I'm just really grateful for the telephone, for those people that call me, for those people that pick up the phone when I take and call them. Thank you. It's the one thing that really helps keep me abstinent. And with that, I will pass.
Thanks, Sheila. Meetings.
Hi, I'm Becky P., compulsive overeater.
Hi, Becky.
Hi, welcome.
Thanks. Meetings. Meetings are gatherings of 2 or more compulsive overeaters or compulsive eaters who come together to share their experience before and after recovery and to share the strength and hope OA has given them. Though there are many kinds of meetings, fellowship is the basis of them all. As HOW members, we attend at least 1 HOW meeting a week. Meetings are an opportunity for us to identify and confirm a common problem by relating to one another and by sharing the gifts we receive through this program. So I wanted to read something from the OA 12 and 12 that I've been working out of, but this kind of spoke to me in regard to meetings. And this just, I am just very impressed with this new format for meeting. I've never been here, and it's just so amazing that we can all connect in this way. So let's see. Perhaps it is fortunate for us and for the millions of compulsive overeaters who still suffer that most of us who've worked this program will be unable to keep the recovery we have unless we share our experience, strength, and hope with others. That's a good reminder for me. Some of us have tried to follow our program in isolation and have been unable to keep our emotional balance and abstinence. Had this been possible, we might not be here today to carry the message to those who still suffer. We would have missed the best part of the 12 steps, for the greatest joy of recovery comes to us when we share our OA program with others. And that's what I'm experiencing right now as I humbly realize how much work and
innovative thinking and commitment to the program. Those people who don't have the meetings that I've had here in the Twin Cities, not everyone's in that position and really has to work hard to connect. And so I'm just encouraged by that power of wanting recovery. And that's the kind of thing that fills my heart and keeps me going. So a few of us have suspected, So for years we've looked for gratification on other things, in eating, material possessions, careers, etc. The satisfaction that we felt in them was small compared with the joy we have found in sharing the program with other compulsive overeaters. Helping other compulsive eaters through sponsoring and other forms of service to our groups, service bodies, and OA as a whole has been a surprisingly powerful factor in our recovery. Simple actions that seemed unimportant when we took them have turned out to have profound effects on us and on others. Hugs we've given at meetings, phone calls we've made, letters we've written, simple words of encouragement we've spoken and quickly forgotten have come back to us, sometimes at the very moment we've needed them most, from people who received through them the strength to continue their journey of recovery. Most of us who have been around OA for more than a few months have seen miracles of recovery in our meetings. We count among our friends people whom we first met when they were suffering newcomers. We've seen them transformed by this simple program, and we're gratified to have played a part, even if all we did was show up at OA meetings and say, keep coming back. The joy we receive as we try to carry the message is a positive force in our lives today, sustaining us through good times and hard times, transforming us and our companions in recovery. And so just to a reminder, happy to be here kind of unexpectedly impromptu to share, to be able to be a part of this meeting and reach out and receive what you guys are, also receive what you guys are offering. Thank you.
Thanks, Becky. Thanks, Becky. Literature and writing.
Hi, everyone. My name is Melanie C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater member in Oregon. Literature and writing. Hi, everyone. Literature. We study the textbook Alcoholics Anonymous, referred to as the Big Book, and the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, another AA book, to reinforce our program. By substituting the words food and compulsive eating for the words alcohol and alcoholism, we can identify closely. We also read OA literature. The OA book, Overeaters Anonymous, referred to as the Brown Book, the OA 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, for Today for Daily Meditation, and Lifeline, our Journal of Recovery. Read on a daily basis, our literature impresses on us certain basic truths that we have found vital. Our literature aid books are an ever-available tool that gives any problem as a strength to deal with it and the very hope that there is a solution for us. Right. In addition to our writing our inventories and the list of people we have harmed, most of us have found that writing has been an invincible tool for working the steps. Further, putting our thoughts and feelings down or describing a troubling incident helps us to better understand and reveal to us thinking or talking about them. Past, the most common reaction to life. When we put our difficulties down on paper, it becomes easier to see situations more clearly. Action. Literature and writing. When I came into these rooms, kind of laughed, but it was serious. I had the attention span of a gnat. And to focus on any kind of reading, put anything together, make any sense of anything, I could not. I punched down so tight and I wrote so hard like this, and my shoulders would hurt, my hands would cramp, as it was too tenant to what I am, and I wanted to put them in certainly well, as the tenants here would have differently.
I was set to the task of writing some early on. We have our writing that we do as we first come to those answers to those questions, and then diligently and faithfully, because I wanted to be a good sponsee. Well, let's fast forward. What happens for me now with the reading process when I get something and I can see it with my eyes and it just goes immediately to my heart and my chest? The meditation books, the pieces that people lend to me that I get to read, the big book that I study every single day and every day for 14 years in this program, tearing each one apart, seeing what the directions are here today. There certainly were different, 14 years ago, and I see things differently, and I'm in a different place, and I can get connected to higher power just instantly by that kind of reading stuff. It's very important to me. I'm involved in many other meetings as well, and I hear things from people that lost me for a second. I wanted to get into the writing part of this piece as well, and that putting pen to paper has made all the difference in the world. And I remember being very new in recovery, and when we do our writing assignments, my sponsor would have me at the last bit of the meeting when we had those 3 minutes to share to stand up and read off of my paper what I read. And oh my gosh, what an experience that was. I hardly could do it with a dry eye because there was something fundamentally happening in my heart. There's this peace that once pen and hand go to paper, there's this channel for the higher power to work through me. And I've learned so much about myself, whether it be through my fourth step process or continuing now daily with the 10-step process of being able to identify the disease on the spot, capture it, and hand it over to my higher power so that I can get on to be productive in my life and out of the disease action of what I used to do before. And with that, I pass.
Thanks, Melanie. Service.
Hi guys, Kelly, compulsive overeater in California.
Kelly.
Hi. Service. Carrying the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers is the basic purpose of our fellowship and therefore the most fundamental form of service. Any service, no matter how small, that will reach a fellow sufferer adds to the quality of our own program. Putting away chairs, making coffee, talking to newcomers, doing whatever needs to be done in a group or for OA as a whole are ways in which we give back to what we have so generously been given. Do what you can when you can. A life of sane and happy usefulness is what we are promised as a result of working the 12 steps. Service fulfills that promise. Always to extend the hand and heart of OA to all who share my compulsion. For this, I am responsible. And I just want to pull up. So I started just typing a few things of what giving service means to me. So first, one of the ways of giving service is protecting my abstinence at all times. Other forms of giving service, taking a call, making a call, the beautiful circle of sponsorship from sponsor to sponsee to sponsoring. We are all cogs on the wheel. One time a fellow described that to me and I thought it was just a beautiful analogy of our program. The live meeting. I know so much goes on behind the scenes to get this meeting going and in front of the camera action as well. Another way of giving service for me, I made my first monetary donation to this meeting. It has given me so much life and so much. It says we give what we can when we can. So I was grateful to be able to give back to this meeting. Readings, before we become sponsors, reading how readings in the beginning of meetings, when we become sponsors, pitching on a tool, calling newcomers, helping out by taking a food change or a food mistake, and to give back. When I first came to Howe, everyone was doing the same thing, and everyone talked the same, almost robotic. People used phrases I had never heard of: hookup, food commitment, abstinent kit, and the same exact phrases, doing it with ya, let it go. Everyone seemed like mechanical robots. I wanted it. So I was like, put me in, coach. How I give service today is when I talk to newcomers, I just speak with compassion about the program and what those phrases mean and what those, the words we say, so that, you know, I can help out a fellow newcomer who might have felt lost like I did. I also share my own story, which includes taking 8 months, three sponsors to get through 70 questions. And I used to be kind of embarrassed about that. Like, why can't I get this program? And now it's kind of my badge of honor. It's my story. It takes what it takes. I'm grateful for that experience and my clay feet. We get to be of service when we share our stories. We never know who we're helping or what seeds might be planted. So carrying the message is a big one. Even cheering for people on the meetings for their length of recovery, unmuting our phones and giving a woot woot is being of service to our fellows. And finally, what I love hearing is the best thing I can do is just recover, recover, recover. So that's another way of getting giving service. So thanks for letting me share. Pass.
Thanks, Kelly. Will all people doing service for OA at any level please stand and applaud service? Woo-hoo! If you have not yet added your information to the chat for our We Care book, please take a moment to do so now so we can add it to the book here in the room. We will keep the We Care book circulating until everyone has had an opportunity to sign it. The folder will continue to circulate for the duration of the meeting so that everyone may take names and phone numbers for their personal contacts. Enter your email in the chat to receive the list. Is there anyone who has not yet signed? The Minnesota OA How Live meeting is a friendly place and we want to get to know each other. If you are here with us today for the first time in the meeting room, will you please stand and introduce yourself by first name only? Becky?
My name is Becky and I'm a compulsive overeater. Glad
Hi,
to be
Becky.
Here.
I think that's our only first timer in the room. If you are attending for the first time virtually, please click the raise hand icon, turn on your camera, or press star and six on your telephone keypad. No newcomers out there? Don't be shy. Okay, may we please have a treasurer's report?
Hi, I'm Heidi, a compulsive overeater and the treasurer for this meeting. We currently have $965.78, of which we have to keep a $500 minimum balance. Thanks.
Thank you, Heidi. Our seventh tradition helps this meeting provide the equipment, enhance our website, make it accessible to individuals who are deaf or anyone using ASL, refine the technology, develop other live OA face-to-face groups, and more. A basket will be passed for those here in the room and those joining virtually. You may go to mnhowlive.org to donate. We've got some bad news for you.
No.
Yeah, it was bad news for us and it will probably be bad news for you, whether you quit 6 days, months or years. If you go out and take that first compulsive bite of food, you'll end up just like you have been in the past. You are a compulsive eater. Oh, bro. Big book, page 187, if you don't believe me. All right, are there any announcements here in the room or virtually? Sheila.
Hi, I'm Sheila, still a compulsive overeater. Hi. Just wanted to let everyone know that the recordings from the Minnesota Convention, the Union Eater Group Convention that took place at the beginning of October are out on the overeaters.org website. So if you go to overeaters.org, go to the events tab and then to recordings, you can purchase the recording of the convention for only $15. So if you can help spread the word to maybe those people that were unable to attend the convention and wish they would have could have been able to be there. We have lots of great speakers, and so they're all recorded, and you can get that recording and listen to it over and over, or listen to it in your leisure time. But if you can help spread the word on that, that would be terrific. And then also, just want to remind everyone of another workshop coming up in Wayzata on November 16th. It's Do You Feel Stuck in OA or in Your Life? And it says, join us for a workshop to help you uncover where you are stuck and how to get unstuck without falling back into compulsion. So that's from 9 to noon on November 16th. And you can register for that at overeaters.org. And for those in the room, there are some little flyers back on the table. And then in January, another workshop on January 25th. It's a Saturday. It's from 8:30 to 3 p.m., and it's the tools of the trade, what abstinence looks like. It's kind of a lot of getting back to the basics of abstinence, and that also you can register for online at overeaters.org. And I'll pass.
Thanks, Sheila.
Any other announcements offline or here? Literature and books. Newcomer and sponsor materials are located at the virtual intergroups resource page at www.oahowphonemeetings.com. You can purchase OA books and pamphlets at bookstore.oa.org. It is now time for medallions. At OA How Meetings, we recognize the milestones of recovery for those working the How program. All other OA abstinence is given a round of applause. Anyone joining us virtually may also request a medallion by turning on your camera, raising your hand, sending a chat message, or unmuting your phone. And that's my job. So where are the medallions? Medallions. Let's see. Lovely box full. Okay, does anyone have 9+ years today? Really? Oh my goodness. We should start the countdown then. 20? 19,
18, 17,
16, 15, 14.
Me, Melanie, 14 years.
Yay, Melanie!
Thank you.
Melanie, would you like a medallion?
I would like a medallion. I would. Thank you so much, Virginia.
Okay. Here's a 14-year-old medallion here for you. I'm putting it through the airwaves to you. We'll mail it to you.
Thank you.
It's wonderful that you're celebrating with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oh, all right. I have to find one. This is 15. It might take me a bit. Maybe I'll give these to you and you can find the 14 ones. And I'll move it right along. Okay. All right. So while we're finding the 14 and passing it around with our good wishes, we'll go on to 8. Drum roll. 7. All right. We have a 7-year chip for you, Mary. Don't go away. There you go.
Thank you.
Yes, pass that around and put good energies on it.
It's only 6. Do I get a repeat?
Well, that's put in the wrong file then. You can tell this is a live show.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a 7.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay. Moving right along. How about 6, 5, 4? Are you getting up for a 6? Oh, okay. 4, 3, 2, 18 months, 1 year, 9 months. Are there any surprises in the room? 6 months, 3 months, 2 months, 1 month? Maybe online. People could chime in online too. And the last but not least is a 24-hour chip. This is for anyone who has a desire to change what they're doing with food and has been inspired by something they have seen or heard here and would like to have a 24-hour medallion. This started with Sister Ignatius, who gave it to drunks leaving the facility and said, here is a medallion, and before you drink again, you have to bring this back to me. Some people say in OA, when you feel like eating, put it in your mouth, and when it dissolves, go right ahead and eat what you like. So, but the idea being it's something to hang on to, meaning that you've been inspired, you want to make a change in your life regarding food, and would like something to hold on to as you begin that journey. It has been used also for people who want to reboot their program. They need some fresh inspiration and would like a 24-hour chip for that purpose. So would anyone like today a 24-hour medallion? Either here in the room or?
I would.
Yay! Rob? Woo!
Hey, Rob. Hey.
Awesome, Rob. Okay, this is your very special 24-hour. We will be sending it to you.
Thank you.
If you want it sent to you, private. Is that again? Private message. Heidi, and we will have it sent to you.
Lovely.
We're going to pass this around with your name on it and then send it to you.
To you all.
All right. With
love. Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyone else? No? All right. Good job, everyone. This is an exciting day. 3 medallions. Cool. Wonderful. Okay. Step ups. At this point in our meeting, we would ask the group to join us as we celebrate another example of the miracles that abound in OA. The step up portion of the meeting asks a sponsor to introduce a newcomer who is at least 70 days of back-to-back abstinence, who's completed the first 3 steps of the program, and who is now ready to become a sponsor. At Howl meetings, new sponsors are presented with a cactus plant to signify the tough love of the program. Stick with the stickers, remember to drink your water, and a reminder that we don't water down the program. Are there any step-ups today? Not today, but there's always tomorrow. Anniversaries, birthdays are celebrated for each year of continuous abstinence. At anniversaries, a candle is lit at the beginning of the meeting, and we invite the person who is celebrating an anniversary to come to the front of the room for the anniversary reading. Are there any anniversaries? Yay. Okay.
Yes.
I am told to hold this very carefully. All right. Good. Hold it?
Yeah, thank you.
That'd be great. Mary.
Now comes the biggest question yet. What about the practice of these principles in all our affairs? Can we love the whole pattern of living as eagerly as we do the small segment of it that we discover when we try to help other compulsive eaters achieve sobriety? Can we bring the same spirit of love and tolerance into our sometimes deranged family lives that we bring into our OA How group? Can we have the same kind of confidence and faith in these people who have been infected and sometimes crippled by our own illness that we have in our sponsors? Can we actually carry the AA spirit into our work? Can we meet our newly recognized responsibilities to the world at large? And can we bring new purpose and devotion to the religion of our choice? Can we find a new joy of living in trying to do something about all these things? Furthermore, how shall we come to terms with seeming failure or success? Can we now accept and adjust to either without despair or pride? Can we accept poverty, sickness, loneliness, and bereavement with courage and serenity? Can we steadfastly content ourselves with the humbler, yet sometimes more durable, satisfactions when the brighter, more glittering achievements are denied us? The OA answer to these questions about living is yes. All of these things are possible. We know this because we see monotony, pain, and even calamity turn to good use by those who keep on trying to practice the 12 steps. And if these are facts of life for the many compulsive eaters who have recovered, they can become the facts of life for many more.
Ooh. And I think I'm supposed to present you with these roses, but it doesn't.
Oh.
It doesn't say so in the script, but I will do it anyway. Mary, I would like to now
present you with these seven
beautiful roses
as a celebration of your 7 years of back-to-back abstinence.
Thank you so much. Okay. You leave them up here for us to enjoy a little longer? All right. Okay, the leader that be me now qualifies for 10 minutes, which I thought were lost if anyone wants to show them on the line. I need a timekeeper if anyone's doing that. I'm Virginia, compulsive eater bulimic. Hey, great to be here again. I have some excuse not to have been here for a while. I broke the arm and have had two operations since I saw you last. I will do a thumbnail sketch of my story because I wanted to touch on the step for the month, which is the 11th step, if I get a chance to get there. I'd like to just touch on that. But giving a quick summary of my history of the disease, I got a clue in another 12-step program by doing a 10th step where food came up as a recurrent problem for me. So I went to the sponsor of that program and said, I think I've got a problem with food. And she said, well, I'm not going to deal with that. You have to go to a different program. So that sent me to, I decided to come to OA How. And I had great confidence having been in another 12-step program. But I discovered that food is actually the mother of all addictions for me. It's the hardest for me to deal with. What it was like before was that
coming to Howe is that I tried a lot of things to control my eating. Initially, I tried over-exercise. I was quite athletic. I tried cross-country skiing, lap swimming, karate, all at the same time until the result for me was a lot of overuse injury. So I couldn't maintain my practice of over-exercising after a point in time because my body just wouldn't stand for it any longer. So I was casting about for another way to control my weight. I found a small book in the attic belonging to someone else that inspired me. It was a how-to book on how to fast. And it said you cannot fast safely beyond 3 months without colonics. And I didn't want to pay for that. So I learned how to administer my own colonics, which is now a horrible thing to admit to anyone. But it was a very effective way to lose the weight, but also harmful. And I eventually had the sense to give that up. I casting about now for a healthier way to maintain my weight, I discovered Weight Watchers, and which I'm not sure if I should be mentioning. I quickly became a star life member. That wasn't the hard part. The hard part was as soon as I reached the goal, I had decided that I had found the answer, and I could go out and enjoy eating again because now I knew the answer and I would just come back and do it again if I gained the weight. So I ran out the door, gained the weight, came back, and then I couldn't do it anymore. So what had been the answer was no longer the answer. I think while I was out eating, my disease was doing push-ups, and I no longer had the control that I had exercised originally and could no longer use that program to lose or maintain my weight loss. When I shared this small history with someone in OA House, she said, "Honey, I think you might be a bulimic." And I said, "What's that? I don't know what that is." And the way she explained it to me was, it's anyone who uses extreme measures to bring their weight down. And I was doing this large yo-yo thing where I was going way, way low and then way, way, way high and then back and forth. Not a good thing. 70 pounds gained and lost so many times. I don't know how many times. At a certain point in time, I couldn't do that anymore. And I simply let go and got obese so that I was a teacher, so I could wear large sweatshirts and they were men's size large, and I use that as my outfit. Disguising, I don't think, but I thought the fact that I was now officially in the obese category. When I finally was able to get on maintenance and clean out my attic, I discovered that I had complete wardrobes upstairs in size 4 to 16. So that was pretty clear evidence of my disorder. Then I got into Howe, and I would like to say that was an immediate success story, but it wasn't because I still thought that I wanted to maintain some control and that I had some opinions about some improvements I could make in the program. And so I decided that I would modify some of the things that I didn't agree with in Howe and do them my way. What basically was happening during that period was that I had decided that I would decide where the line was. Instead of standing at the line with everyone else, which is the safe way to do this, I decided I would describe where I would stand with the abstinence. And so I kept pushing the line out further and further using a lot of rationale that I thought were perfectly good at the time. And I thought I had the best of both worlds. My mind and how equals fantastic program, right? Okay, three and a half years later, I was at my local movie theater with a bucket of popcorn, you know, one of those big ones like this. And I love those because you could get free refills. And I was on my second bucket. And I thought it was good to actually add some pop to the mix. And I started to throw up into my bucket of popcorn at the movie theater. That was a turning point for me because my great mind, which had been telling me that this was a great plan, even my addict brain was able to detect that I was no longer doing very well with my program. And I went very humbly back to O.A. Howe and said, okay, I'm gonna do everything just the way I'm told to, no more fooling around. So what happened? I stopped fighting. I stopped trying to improve or control. I started asking for help. I started helping and accepting help. I became an obedient practitioner of all the tools. And what is it like now? Now I enjoy wonderful friendships that came from those calls I didn't want to make. A very good state of health and fitness now. I have gone through losing both my parents with the support of the program. I have changed my personality. I don't know what happened to me because I used to be very upsettable. And now I tend to have very calm responses to most things. And I know how to ask for and receive right answers from my fellowship and my higher power. I was just going to touch on the 11th step briefly, big book, page 86, 87. On awakening, we consider our plans for the day. We ask God to direct our thinking. Our thought life is thus placed on a much higher plane. We ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought, or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come. It works. It really does. I've just recently resumed my 11th step. I find it is a wonderful tool that I don't want to omit. I tack it on. I do my 10th and then I follow with 11th. I find that it helps to pose questions at the end of my writing and then bring those questions with me into meditation. I read somewhere that truth walks toward us on the paths of our questions. And as soon as you think you have the answer, you've closed that path and may miss some vital new information. Wait a while in the stillness and do not rush to conclusions, no matter how uncomfortable the unknowing. And I have found that I can wait and be uncomfortable, unknowing my answers. But God, when I have sincerely cried from the heart, will eventually give me those answers. So that'll pass. I would now like to introduce Mary G., our guest who qualifies for 20 minutes. Take it away, Mary.
Okay, I'll take it away. Yeah. It is really quite wonderful that as I review my recovery journey over the past year, more factors that contribute to my disease process reveal themselves. I believe God reveals more as we are able to receive more and more. And I expect this ongoing revelation to continue as the days pass. I remember a psychologist counseling me over 20 years ago that I needed to take a much closer look into my alcoholic family backgrounds 20 years ago. And then 7 years ago, I actively sought out the rooms of O.A. Howe so I could have some understanding about what was behind my inability to lose weight and maintain a healthy body weight. It's been a long and very fruitful journey so far, not without its twists, turns, and bumps. But thankfully, I've never been flying solo on this truly life-saving work. And I have to be careful that I don't sound like one of the early AA pioneers and think that if I have a good understanding of my early childhood influences, I will hold the key to my recovery from this life-destroying disease. This journey in self-discovery that I embarked on over 7 years ago gives me a lot of compassion for that little girl brought up in a family where alcoholism, workaholism, and codependency were the norm. I adapted as best I could to this toxic mess, and we are all coping as best we could at the time. So what was it like? For me, life became more difficult. My addictive disease kicked in when our small family, my mom, dad, older brother Bob, and I moved from our home in Quincy, Massachusetts to Hingham, Massachusetts when I was a little over 10 years old. I think I moved to Hingham partway through the fourth grade, so I left friends that I had been with since I was two. Shortly after our move, we welcomed my younger brother Jeff into our family, and 3 years later, Martha was born. So my role in our family soon became one of mother's helper with these two little additions. Another and bigger change occurred in my relationship with my dad. The same time as he was working to advance his role as a steel salesman in the Boston office of Bethlehem Steel, he was working hard on our 1810 colonial home that needed lots of renovations. Our father-daughter relationship took a back seat as his alcoholism and workaholism progressed. I realize now what a loss that was for me then and into the future. I was gifted with piano lessons from the age 7. As in other aspects of my life, I practiced consistently and grew to love both the piano and then the pipe organ literature. By junior high, I showed some talent for music. Practice time was alone time for me. And as an introvert, I love this time. Music had and still has a spiritual aspect for me. But my choice to major in music really displeased my dad, but I continued on. There was even the threat of loss of financial support from dad when I declared music as my major. Fortunately, in the background, my mom was my cheerleader. My parents, probably my dad, saved my letters from my 2 years in private high school and college. And again, I have a lot of compassion for that young woman who is trying to follow her dreams with multiple addictions progressing. My weight problem was always a musical theme running through my life. Let me read just a few lines from these letters that I wrote home. And this is, I was a freshman, or maybe I was a sophomore in college. I wrote here, this is actually when we used to write letters. Could you also bring up some diet frosted or maybe send it out if you can? I'm consuming puffed wheat without sugar for breakfast and it's pretty bad. I guess it still would be pretty bad. I try and stick on my diet every day but Sunday. I've lost a little weight, but not much. And then another one, this is in February of the following year. Thanks so much for the candy. I ate it all in one night so it wouldn't be around to tempt me. Told Dr. Startsman, school doctor, about the candy you sent. She said I should have given it to the skinniest girl on the hall. And I told her that she must be kidding. Why would I want to give away the first box of candy that my family has ever sent me? Then I put, as a result, I only lost a quarter of a pound on my diet last week. It was worth it, however. Oh, geez. I don't know if it was a TV commercial or a doctor that had me replacing one meal a day with Metrical in high school. I'm sure exercise was part of my weight reduction plan. In college, I remember skipping meals so I could have practice time when the school practiced instruments. All I can remember is that I was locked in a battle with my weight, and over time, I was losing. My grandfather had died. That's the right page. Hold on. No, it isn't. Oh, well. Hold on. Well, that's interesting. Okay. Okay. So I was in graduate school University of Iowa, and my grandmother had died, and my dad actually asked me to come out and play the organ for her funeral. And I wrote here, my grandfather had died earlier of liver cancer, and one of my first cousins actually would die in her 40s of ovarian cancer several years after gastric bypass surgery. And what I came into contact with for the first and only time were the relatives on my dad's side of the family. And they were all, this is in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. These are all large, heavy eating and heavy drinking folks. And at that time, I took one look at them. Of course, I've been struggling with my weight. For I was probably 22, 23 years old, at least by then. And I looked at them and I thought, you know what? I've got this genetic background, you know? And I sort of at that point just sort of waved the flag thinking, well, this is the way it's gonna be. So that's, you know, it was a very sort of a real downer in my life at that point. And then, as I said, I had one cousin out there who in her 40s died of ovarian cancer after she'd had gastric bypass surgery. And she just took a lot of shaming whenever we were out there. Ray and I married when I was 28 and we had our four children over a 10-year span. I used pregnancy as a free pass to eat for two and gained 40 to 50 pounds with each pregnancy. I remember the time when after delivering one of the children, my weight remained over 200 pounds. And as I breastfed all the kids, I also used that as an excuse for continuing overeating. After our last child, John, was born in Rochester, Minnesota, I did attend Weight Watchers. And like Virginia, I actually got to my goal weight for a few minutes. And that was the last time I would be at goal weight until 2013, about 25 years later. And this disease really wanted to kill me. All my addictive behaviors were in a relentless forward march. While raising our four children, my husband and I worked at a series of part-time jobs. We shared part-time organist choir master positions while I taught lots of piano and organ lessons. Ray tried his hand at real estate and then spent 6 years in county government as a real estate assessor before finally turning to the gig economy and music. With our family of six, there was a lot to do to support ourselves. So my disease of workaholism went hand in hand with compulsive overeating. Finally, now living in Rochester, Minnesota and sharing a full-time job, position at Calvary Episcopal Church, I discerned a call to ordain ministry. Our family moved once again in 1997 to Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, so I could attend seminary. My problems with authoritarian men, starting way back with my dad, was a drumbeat in my life, including an organ instructor in my graduate study and two priests who were my bosses. It was after a four-hour late evening session of emotional abuse with the second priest that I sought help from our seminary psychologist, and that was a real turning point for me. The conversation with the psychologist catapulted me into the wide circle of 12-step recovery fellowships. She all but commanded me to seek out and attend Adult Children of Alcoholics. An unsuccessful attempt to locate a meeting led me to attend my first Al-Anon meeting in August of 1998, about 21 years ago now. I attended Al-Anon in the Pittsburgh area where I attended seminary and at my first parish call. My second parish call was to Western Massachusetts in the spring of 2004. We strategically moved back east so I could be closer to my aging parents. And it was in an Al-Anon meeting that I heard about OA. My problem with food and weight had always been a problem, but my everyday living was becoming more and more difficult. The institutional church has its share of difficult personalities, and I was becoming one of them. My workaholic disease was in full flower, and compulsive overeating was trying to support my efforts. The harder I tried to control the church dynamics, the worse the situation became. It could have been far worse if I didn't have some 12-step recovery tools in my life. I attended my first OA meeting in Auburn, Mass. In the spring of 2004. It was a 90-day meeting, a popular format in New England. When the woman in the row ahead of me volunteered that she could start someone, I quickly asked her to sponsor me. I didn't think at the point I was in my disease that I had the luxury of seeking out someone who had what I wanted. And anyway, in Western Mass, there were very few sponsors. She led me to a what I call now a watered down version of our 2-hour How program, which is common on both coasts. And I think that's why we say we're in the 2-hour How format, because it wasn't 2 hours, it was like an hour and a half, as I recall. Meanwhile, a fellow introduced me to a daily big book meeting on the phone, moderated by a larger than life personality, Andre. And I know Melanie knows about this because I've talked to her about this. If you're on the East Coast, you probably have heard of this guy. Another fellow who carried OI How to the Twin Cities was an active contributor on the line. And then in July 2012, this same fellow, you know, who was out here and started How out here, and some others left what was called the coffee shop and started the Vision for You phone meeting, which again is something that's very well known back in the East Coast, and I think everywhere by now. Around this time, the same fellow, in the room fellow who had introduced me to the coffee shop, introduced me to Lori C's website with all the wonderful audio recordings and written materials. Little would I know when I moved out here, I think it was like that first year I was here, Lori C is the one who does our big book workshop every year. I mean, that I got to see him in person. And this, my friend, I mean, my in-room friend, who was a self-proclaimed agnostic, God was opening the recovery path before me, one vista at a time. It's so interesting. There's always been people that I just wouldn't imagine have been the turning point people for me, and there they were. There they were, for sure. Okay, as I had the giant We Care list from Vision for You phone meeting, I called a fellow from Minnesota to find out what meeting she attended after our move, which hopefully was our last move to St. Paul in October 2012. And guess what? She led me into the Wednesday OA How meeting, Wednesday night meeting. I immediately knew in my gut that I had found a home, a meeting where once and for all, I could finally find out why my eating behavior was so out of control. The answer was, of course, we know from the doctor's opinion, I was the proud owner of an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. It took another 6 years, well after I lost my excess weight, to uncover my disease of workaholism, which has been such a factor in my life. And to think years and years ago how self-satisfied I felt to have escaped the disease of alcoholism, little did I know what a bumpy ride was ahead of me. So what is it like now from the vista of 7 years out? There is the first miracle. 7 years on a doctor-prescribed food plan, one that I choose, one that adapts well to train and plane travel. One of the most important steps I took per our guidelines was to locate a professional dietitian. And it was a referral from a fellow in our fellowship here. And it was the dietitian that suggested the general physician that I see now. It wasn't the other way around. I found my GP through my dietitian. Another extremely important awareness for me is to give my physical body an important seat at the table. In my disease of compulsive overeating, I thought I thought that by abiding to my personal food plan and losing weight, that would allow me to be more energetic and to do more. And that was the disease of workaholism speaking to me. Over this past year, my body has spoken to me about balance, that God is speaking to me through my physical body, and finally, I am paying attention. Part of my daily action plan is a commitment to physical exercise, and I live only about a block from the Midway YMCA. Another part of my action plan is to reevaluate my current commitments and ask for outside advice when considering new commitments. And this is a challenge for me. My husband and I have a lifetime of stuff, which means lots of paper to sort through in our 2-bedroom apartment. We want to be available to our daughter who was recently divorced. And one of the reasons we moved back to Minnesota in 2012 was to be close to our then newborn granddaughter. Ava is now 7, and there's a 3-year-old grandson, Ezekiel, who have never seen me eat any sugar. I remain optimistic about the future. The tools of the program, plan of eating, sponsorship, anonymity, telephone meetings, literature and writing, and service, which 7 years ago were such an add-on to an already overfull life, have become little by little my ticket to freedom in daily life. I believe God wanted me to enjoy it all along. Program has moved from the edges of my life into its very center. I have no idea what lies ahead, but with God as my guide and fellows with me on this unfolding journey, I have confidence that life will unfold just as God wills. And my prayer for all this evening is, trust that this miracle that I enjoy is waiting for you as together, hand in hand, we trudge the road of happy destiny one day at a time. And that's it.
Thank you.
Do we have time for 3-minute pitches? No, I'm getting a no on that. Oh, no time for 3-minute pitches or sharing. So I want to thank you for I want to thank you for allowing me to be your leader for this meeting today. I also thank all of those who participated, especially our speaker, Mary, who offered so much of herself. Thanks, Mary. May we please have the reading of Just For Today?
Hi, I'm Sheila, compulsive overeater.
Hey, Sheila.
Just for today, I will try to live through this day only and not tackle my whole life problems at once. I can do something for one day that would appall me if I felt I had to keep it up for a lifetime. Just for today, I will be happy. This assumes to be true what Abraham Lincoln said, that most folks are as happy as they make up their minds to be. Just for today, I will adjust myself to what is and not try to adjust everything to my own desires. I will take my luck as it comes and fit myself to it. Just for today, I will try to strengthen my mind. I will study. I will learn something useful. I will not be a mental loafer. I will read something that requires effort, thought, and concentration. Just for today, I will exercise my soul in 3 ways. I will do somebody a good turn and not get found out. If anyone knows of it, it will not count. I will do at least 2 things I don't want to do just for exercise. I will not show anyone that my feelings are hurt. They may be hurt, but today I will not show it. Just for today, I will be agreeable. I will look as well as I can, dress becomingly, talk low, act courteously, criticize not one bit, not find fault with anything, and not try to improve or regulate anybody except myself. Just for today, I will have a program. I may not follow it exactly, but I will have it. I will save myself from 2 pests, hurry and indecision. Just for today, I will have a quiet half hour all by myself and relax. During this half hour sometime, I will try to get a better perspective of my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid. Especially, I will not be afraid to enjoy what is beautiful and to believe that as I give to the world, so the world will give to me.
For those joining us in person, I would like to ask for your help in putting away the equipment and bringing this room back to its original setup after we have conducted our closing prayer. Thanks for your help with this. We'd also like to thank our skilled interpreters for helping us to reach even more people who struggle with this disease. Closing statement. To those who are still new to the program, we remind you that all that was said here today should safely remain here as we respect and cherish our tradition of anonymity. We also assure you that following the program will get your weight off or on. Abstinence will remove the cravings. Our way of life will remove the compulsion in time and give you contentment in all areas of life. After a moment of meditation, will those who wish to please join in to say the Serenity Prayer? Virtually, please unmute yourselves. Let's pray for those who are still suffering.
Becky, would you like to start?
Okay, God.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. Courage to change the things I can.
And wisdom.
And wisdom to know the difference. It's not mine. Be done.
Coming back. It works when you work it and give a lot of love.
Woo! Jazz hands. Congratulations.
Good night, everyone. Good night. Thank you. Bye. Good night.
Yeah. Someone specifically is asking for your number. Can I share it with you?
Oh, yeah.